The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and today I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Gray Oldenburg. Nathan Glidewell is out today with being sick. He'll be back next week. Talking some AAA today. It's probably going to be the majority of the show. For all any listeners out there, AAA stands for Alex's Awesome Anecdotes. Started doing that on the Jay Barker Show when I was interning there. Carried over to Students of the Game on Tony Curry Radio. All it is just going over the top stories from around the country in sports from the past week or so. So let's hop right into it, starting with the NFL stories. The first one is the Green Bay Packers signed former Birmingham Stallions quarterback and 2023 USFL MVP Alex Magoo. Greg, we got to see this guy in person firsthand. What are your thoughts on the Packers going and signing him to back up a guy in Jordan Love who himself has question marks around him?
Yeah, obviously the Packers have question marks at that quarterback position. And I think Alex Magoo, I don't necessarily know if he's the instant answer with the departure of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay and the questions that Jordan Love just had, just like you said there, Alex. But it's somebody to come in there and compete with Jordan Love. They haven't needed to address the quarterback position in years upon years at Green Bay. And now they're trying to scramble. And we've seen, you know, in the 2 years that the USFL has been going on, we've seen some of these, you know, success stories from the USFL that go on and get contracts in the NFL and have success in the NFL. And I think Alex Magoo has the perfect chance to do that here with the Packers. I think he's coming into an open competition with Jordan Love. And we saw what he could do for the Stallions and how efficient and unbelievable he was down the stretch of that USFL season, winning the MVP, winning the championship. If you're a Green Bay Packers fan, you should be really excited about what the kind of potential this guy has coming into your program and coming into that open competition with Jordan Love.
Yeah, I've been listening to some reports, reading them, and Jordan Love has not looked great, not been very impressive in the Packers camp. So I'm wondering if he starts off pretty bad in the preseason and in the regular season, if he gets benched and Alex Magoo comes in to start, because the Packers, like you said, Grace, it feels like a wide open competition, but I don't think they can afford to go into the first week of the season and start somebody like Alex Magoo when you went ahead and wasted a first round pick on a guy in Jordan Love in the hopes that he can be what Aaron Rodgers was when Brett Favre got kicked out the door. But it'll be interesting to see how the Packers handle the situation going forward.
For sure.
Moving on to the next story, and Lord, it feels like we're going over this every week we do AAA, but the Denver Broncos defensive end Ioma Uwazurike has been suspended indefinitely for betting on NFL games. He becomes the 10th player suspended by the NFL since April for violations of the league's gambling policy. Gray, like I just said, it's a 10th player to be suspended for gambling, and that's not including Calvin Ridley, who was suspended last year for gambling. So do you agree with the NFL going and, you know, getting more strict on this gambling stuff, or do you think they should be a little bit more lax when it comes to this?
No, they need to be strict. It's a rule, and it's not just a rule in the association you work for. If you go and say I'm working at some 9-to-5 job randomly, and I break one of the most important rules and laws in that organization and for that company, they're going to suspend me, if not fire me. The NFL needs to do that exactly. And I think suspending players indefinitely is definitely the way to go. My issue is coming at what is going on? Like, why are y'all betting on these NFL games? That makes no sense. I think it comes down to something we talked about a few weeks ago when we had another issue like this, is I think the NFL, to move away from this situation, needs to go out and make have a private organization run by the NFL and the NFL Players Association to give each and every one of these players who are receiving this kind of money, give each and every one of them a financial advisor or somebody they can go to talk about their financials. because a lot of these players get these checks and they're like, oh, well, I'm going to go bet or I'm going to go spend it all. And it's gone instantly. We've seen that so many times, way too many times, especially in the NFL with the kind of money that the NFL and the NBA and MLB are throwing around. I think all of those organizations need to focus more on protecting their players financially. And you know, I mean, they're getting all this money to play football, but it's not... It's not being protected. It's not being invested most of the time. And I think if the NFL and the NBA and MLB were to invest in, you know, financial advisors and private organizations to help with that with the NFL Players Association, I think that would be a complete change. And we wouldn't see this issue come up, like you said, Alex, for the 10th time since April. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, so do you think that the NFL should suspend these guys for the rest of their lives, or do you think it should be like a one-year thing, considering, obviously, Isaiah Rodgers bet on his own team, so that's a different circumstance. But like Yoma, the Denver Broncos defensive end, I don't think he bet on his own team. So should he have the ability, like Calvin Ridley, to come back in a year and play again, or should it be uniform and it be, no, you're done for your career, or you're done for 5 years?
You know, just like I said when I was talking about the comparison of it being just any other regular job to compare to the NFL, I mean, there are always options to fire and to release in the NFL and that sort of circumstance. But it's I think it should be a 1 year type of thing. I think it's circumstantial though. Like Isaiah Rodgers should never be allowed to be back in the NFL. But it just comes down to how many bets were placed, who were the bets placed on, why were the bets placed like that, when were the bets placed, that sort of thing. And so I think it's going to be very, you know, situational about, you know, this suspension could be longer, it could be shorter, it could result in a termination or that sort of thing. So I think it's just something that we need to cut it off at the source. We need to not have these issues. That way the NFL doesn't have to worry about how long this suspension should be or if they should be fired or not.
So the NFL has embraced partnerships with sports betting books. Do you think to like discourage betting from players, they should sever those partnerships? Or do you think the players themselves just have the capability to, you know, have the mental capability to say, hey, I shouldn't bet on games? Should the NFL sever the partnerships?
No, I don't think they should separate with those DraftKings and those sort of companies, because that is a major part of professional sports, especially in the NFL and in the U.S., where a lot of, you know, most of the states gambling is legal, and it's a huge money attraction for not only those companies, but for the NFL. It helps with ratings and that sort of thing. So I don't think the NFL is going to end up doing that. I think the NFL needs to start, you know, whipping their players into shape and get them financial advisors and start fixing this from within instead of, you know, trying to cut off outside sources.
Yeah, let's move on to the next story. This is a weird one, because after meeting with owner Jim Irsay about his current contract situation, Indianapolis Colts running back Jonathan Taylor requested a trade, which Irsay has since denied. And the Colts are now considering putting Taylor on the non-football injury list because he has complained of back pain that the team deems pre-existing to the start of training camp. Putting him on that list would allow the Colts to withhold his 2023 salary. But since then, Taylor has tweeted that he, quote-unquote, never had back pain and never reported back pain. And however, he's still on the physically unable to play list due to offseason ankle surgery. And with Taylor due about $4.3 million this season and heading into the final year of his rookie deal, would you give him a contract extension, Gray, or would you be like Jim Irsay here and say, no, you're not going to get one?
Man, that's tough, because you're looking at this from two different sides, and you look at this from the Colts side, and you're looking at this from Irsay's side as well. It's difficult to... You know, with the way the NFL's moving and that sort of thing, with the play style that it's turning into, I think running backs aren't going to be as valued. They're not going to be as paid as much. And we saw that, you know, we've seen that a lot the past few weeks, where we've talked about these running backs aren't getting paid as much as the quarterbacks and the big wide receivers, and they're not able to have that flexibility. And I think Irsay and the Colts recognize that. But I also think they're handling this wrong and putting him on the non-football injury list, because just like you said, Alex, that would withhold his salary. So he would not get paid for an entire year and then have to come back, and he would just have to, it'd be right back to square one. He'd be exactly where he was before and right back to this offseason in the next summer. So I think that's the wrong way to go about it. And then if you look at this from the Jonathan Taylor side, Jonathan Taylor is a stud running back. He's a dominant running back and a running back with extreme potential to be, you know, one of the top running backs in this league if he isn't already. So he does deserve a contract extension. He deserves it due to what he's done for the Colts in the past, even besides his injuries. But it's hard to look at that on both sides. I think the Colts are kind of holding back because they're in a struggle boat themselves. I think Jonathan Taylor wants out, not only just for, because he thinks he could have better options. I think imagine him on like the Eagles or something like that. That would be very, very dangerous. But I also think Jonathan Taylor knows he deserves a contract extension due to the potential that he has and what he's done outside of his injuries. And I just think there's going to be disagreements. I definitely think there needs to be a trade, though.
Yeah. Jim Irsay is scum of the earth. He's a terrible person. We've known this for a while, the comments he's made. Comment he made is, if I die tonight and Jonathan Taylor is out of the league, no one's going to miss us. League goes on. We know that. The National Football League rolls on. It doesn't matter who comes and who goes. And it's a privilege to be a part of it. I mean, to say if I die tonight and Jonathan Taylor's out of the league, that's awful to say. This dude, he's going to be the next owner kick out of this league like the Washington Commanders was. I mean, Dan Snyder. I mean, this dude is just scum of the earth. It just baffles me how somebody with this type of money, this type of person, gets that type of money to own an NFL team and actually has owned it for the time he has. It just baffles me. And then, you know, your star player, probably one, if not the best player on your team, comes to you and says, "Hey, I want a new contract." And you just tell him, "Nah, we're not going to extend you. We're going to make you play out the rest of your contract, your last $4.3 million this year." And then he says, "I want out." And you say, "No, we're not going to do that either." I mean, there's got to be some sort of compromise here. I know Taylor's probably asking for maybe the most money of any running back right now. But we look at what he did a couple of years ago. He honestly deserves it. And the way your offense is going to be run this year, he's going to deserve it, because you bring in Shane Steichen, who was with the Eagles at the offensive coordinator position last year. And you saw what Jalen Hurts and Miles Sanders did last season in that backfield. And you get Anthony Richardson at the quarterback. And you're going to have Jonathan Taylor if he plays. I mean, that's going to be a deadly duo back there. And they're both young. Taylor's only 23 years old, 24 years old. It's not like Jonathan Taylor's 27, 28, 29 years old. Going up to Jim Irsay and saying, "Hey, I want a new contract," and running backs are now out of the league by the age of 30. He's 23, 24 years old. It shouldn't be an issue. There should be compromise here. And the fact that Jonathan Taylor cannot get a contract and we can go out and give Justin Herbert a $50 million a year is absurd. It's absolutely absurd, because Justin Herbert, while he has the stats, I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback in this league. Jonathan Taylor is a top 5 running back. Maybe even top 3 if he has a good season this year. And Jim Irsay, because he's scum of the earth, will not give this man a contract, because and then they try to get him to where they have to pay him this year. This is a terrible situation. I feel for Jonathan Taylor, because dude has worked his tail off his entire career, and he did it in that 2021 season. So Jim Irsay, I can't stand the dude. Let's move on. To another running back that actually signed a contract extension with his team. Despite saying that he may not consider playing the season due to not receiving a long-term contract, Saquon Barkley had a quote-unquote epiphany and signed a one-year deal worth up to $11 million to return to the New York Giants. The deal does not include a no franchise tag clause, which means the Giants can tag him next offseason. Gray, do you agree with Saquon going and signing this deal instead of going and agreeing to the franchise tag, which basically would have been about the same amount of money in same year?
I think it's interesting. I don't know what the thought process there was, because the deal that he did sign, I mean, just like you said, Alex, about the same amount of money. It's $11 million. I think the franchise tag would have been a little more, but now it allows the franchise tag to come next offseason. So obviously Saquon doesn't really want out of New York by the looks of this, but it also seems like he doesn't want a long, he didn't, you know, he didn't want that long-term deal because he, I mean, he completely missed on that. Because just like I said about the Jonathan Taylor situation, the game's moving away from the top talent at running backs. Now, Saquon Barkley is a top talent at running back, just like Jonathan Taylor, and deserves to be paid at least $11 million a year. But now, I mean, it's just really weird. The situation that's going on with the running backs, this was 10 years ago. Saquon Barkley is one of the highest paid players in the NFL. Because of the way the game was and how dominant Saquon has proven that he could be again, you know, even though his injuries. So I don't know what this epiphany was, but I think it's, he could come in this year and here's how I would see it. He could come in this year. And if he stays healthy, he could be one of the best running backs in the NFL this season. And then he could get that long-term deal from New York next season, or he could go somewhere else and get a long-term deal. So maybe that was his idea or epiphany, like he worded it, to sign this deal with the opportunity to be franchise tag next season. I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on next offseason and something to be thinking about all season long as we watch the Giants and Saquon play and the rest of the running backs in the NFL and how he compares to those guys and to see what happens.
This is another weird situation because the Giants go out and give Daniel Jones their quarterback, $150 million over like three to 5 years, something like that. I can't remember the exact contract, but they give him that massive contract and he's at best in an average quarterback. He's not Justin Herbert. He's not going to be a top 15 quarterback in this league. But then you're probably one of the top five running backs in the league, top eight, comes to you and says, "Hey, I want a new contract." And you tell him no. And it's like you said, Gray, it comes to the fact that the running back position is not valued as it once was. It feels so replaceable. We saw it in Kansas City with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They replaced him with a seventh round rookie and Isaiah Pacheco. And it's happening all over the league. The Vikings, Dalvin Cook gets replaced by Alexander Mattison. So the running back position is not valued as much as it is anymore. And I guess they're feeling it because they had a Zoom call. Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler, Saquon Barkley were on there. I believe Tony Pollard may have been, Derrick Henry, talking about the current situation of contracts. And because guys like Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs and Tony Pollard didn't sign a massive contract extension this offseason, unlike the quarterbacks have. And Barkley himself didn't, like you said, Gray, didn't sign in time to get that long-term contract. So this one-year deal was the best thing he could have done. And that stinks because I think he deserved a long-term contract and because the way he played last season and how important he was that offense, especially for Brian Daboll. I think next offseason is going to be another weird one for running backs because guys like Tony Pollard, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley are going to be, their contract's going to be up again, and they're going to have to renegotiate, or we might see them get tagged again and might see this situation replay itself. And we're not even talking about Jonathan Taylor, who might be in the same situation as well. So these next 2-3 years is really going to show what happens to running the elite level running backs and if they're even going to get the Christian McCaffrey type money that they used to get or the Adrian Peterson type money. So I think this is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out in the next few years.
Absolutely. And before we move on, Alex, I want to break some news here right on our show live. It's just a situation that kind of seems that sucks for the guy, but it kind of seems ironic to the story we were talking about with Jonathan Taylor. Is the Colts running back, this expected Colts starting running back Zach Moss, just suffered a broken arm, which expected to miss about the first 6 weeks of the season. He suffered that in training camp. So now I think the best running back on that Colts roster is Anthony Richardson. It's going to be interesting, especially now you're bringing in Anthony Richardson. I know he's the fourth overall pick, but this dude's a very, very unproven rookie quarterback, and you don't have a running back one or running back two beside him like you could have. And it's not like you have studs at the wide receiver spot. So it's just like you said, it's going to be interesting to see this upcoming offseason, but also this full season, no matter who plays or not, or where they end up, or how much money they get, it's going to be interesting to watch how the running backs are used on different in different offenses and that sort of thing, and how the potential, you know, stud running backs like Jonathan Taylor, like Saquon, and proven running backs get treated. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely think you're going to see it move toward back. I hope it moves back toward something like where we see the Christian McCaffrey type contract for these running backs, because these teams, they sign them on the rookie deal, run them into the ground, and then when they're done with them, they throw them away like they're trash. And it's terrible to see, because these guys have all the talent in the world, and to see them thrown away like trash after 4 years is atrocious. I hate it. It's awful. I mean, Derrick Henry, I know he's, 29 years old, but that team is run him into the ground because they don't have a good quarterback. The receivers have been awful since he's been there, outside of A.J. Brown. So these teams really need to value this position, because these guys worked their tail off and they deserve to be paid. Let's go on to the next story of a guy who actually got paid at a different position, being the quarterback, and Justin Herbert and the Los Angeles Chargers agreeing to a 5-year, $262 million contract extension, which makes him the highest paid quarterback in NFL history based on average annual value, which for Herbert is about $52.5 million per year. Gray, do you agree with Justin Herbert being the highest paid quarterback in the league over guys like Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes?
Heck no. That's ludicrous. What? But, I mean, what we were just saying about all the running backs and how they're not valued, well, we see the value of the quarterback, because you were talking about how Daniel Jones was paid. We'll talk about how the first four picks, or three of the first four picks in the draft, were all, you know, the top three quarterbacks. And then we see these quarterbacks getting this type of money when the running backs are struggling to get more than $11 million. Whoa. I mean, because if I think – and I think about production and potential and value that a guy like Jonathan Taylor or Saquon Barkley bring to compared to a guy like Justin Herbert, I'm in favor of the Barkley and Taylor, because Justin Herbert hasn't won anything in the playoffs. He's not a bad quarterback. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's a bottom tier quarterback. I think he's about middle of the pack, but he's not proven anything to give him $262 million. That's crazy. And make him the highest paid quarterback based on an average annual value and salary is crazy. I mean, that's absolutely crazy, because then you talk about the guys that he's over at that quarterback spot. And I mean, you're talking about guys like Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, just like you said, and these stud rookies that are coming in. I would rather have almost all of them than Justin Herbert, because all those guys I just said are either proven or they have much better potential than a guy like Justin Herbert, who's, again, I preface this, not a bad quarterback. Has shown flashes of being a really good quarterback. He got a great frame, a really powerful arm. He's just not proven anything. Not proven anything to get even $80 million as a 5-year salary, but much less $262.5 million.
Let me put it this way: Justin Herbert, while he has all these stats like most passing yards for a quarterback through their first three seasons, ranking fourth in total QBR in the NFL since being a rookie in 2020. Yeah, these are empty stats. I'm sorry they are for Justin Herbert, because he is basically 500 as a starting quarterback in this league. He's only got to the playoffs one time, blew a 27-0 lead to the Jacksonville Jaguars for that. So he has empty. His stats are empty. They don't mean anything to me, because he can't get to the playoffs. He can't even win a game. He can't even hold on to a 27-0 lead against Jacksonville Jaguars team, who had Trevor Lawrence, who, for that matter, hadn't played amazing, and who had a first-year head coach in Doug Peterson. So I think if any quarterback this offseason, Herbert deserved the extension the least, because he hasn't proven anything in the league, like you said, Gray. He hasn't. And Chargers fans might be angry at me saying, well, you know, he's like the best quarterback we've had since I don't know, Phillip Rivers was there. But Phillip Rivers was an average quarterback as well. I'm sorry, he was. Yeah. And Justin Herbert himself is an above average quarterback. He is maybe a tier above a guy like Daniel Jones. That's weird for me to say, because I think Justin Herbert has a lot of talent, but he hasn't proven it. He hasn't won games he needs to win. Kind of like Daniel Jones. And if you look at Daniel Jones actually won a playoff game. And you can say, well, Saquon Barkley won in that game, or Brian Daboll won him, or the defense won in that game. But Daniel Jones is a starting quarterback, and won the game. He beat the Minnesota Vikings, if I'm not mistaken, who were really, really good last season. So I think Justin Herbert did not deserve this extension at all and to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. But you look at Joe Burrow, who was drafted alongside him in 2020, he's up for a contract as well. So you look at Joe Burrow, he made the Super Bowl, and he was a drive away from winning the Super Bowl. So I think the Cincinnati Bengals are in a difficult situation right now because Burrow just got injured with a calf strain, and he had that ACL injury earlier in his rookie year. So he's got injury issues, but when he's healthy, he's a top five quarterback in this league, top three. So they're going to have to fork out a lot of money for this guy, definitely more than $262 million. Yeah. So the Herbert extension puts the Chargers in a weird situation because now they're in a really difficult managing the cap. But you also put the Bengals in a weird situation because they got to manage guys like Joe Burrow's contract and Jamar Chase's and T. Higgins. So this is going to set a standard for the quarterback position in the future.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the NBA, and another guy, they got a huge contract extension. Guard Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics agreed to a 5-year, $303 million Supermax extension, which is the richest deal in NBA history. One thing to take note of for Brown is he'll be making $69 million in the final year of the contract, which I believe is in 2028 and 2029. So, Greg, I think I know what you're going to say here, but do you think he deserved it? And how does this set the standard for guys like Jason Tatum, who's going to be up for a contract, I believe, next offseason, and Jokic will be up for an extension in a couple of years?
So let me just get this straight. Out of all the Hall of Famers and absolute studs, even current studs that we have in the NBA right now, and you just told me that Jaylen Brown, the guard for the Celtics, probably the second best player on that Celtics team behind Jason Tatum, is a solid guard, is the highest paid player in NBA history. No. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. I understand Jaylen Brown had a really good season this past season. He averaged just over 26 points per game, and it looked like he took a step forward. But are we really about to say that he deserves $69 million in his final year of his contract and $303.7 million on a 5-year deal? No. What? That is more ludicrous than paying Justin Herbert 260-something. Because just like you said, Alex, guess who's going to be up for their extension next year? The best player on that Celtics team, and there's a huge gap between a guy like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, might I add. Jason Tatum, one of the studs in the NBA right now, he was absolutely fantastic this past season, and it has been, he's getting better and better and better, and he deserves a huge contracts extension. Well, the Celtics don't have any money left. They just paid it all to Jaylen Brown. I don't understand this at all. I mean, if they have to let Jason Tatum walk because they paid Jaylen Brown $300 plus million, the Celtics fan base may completely riot. And that would be so bad. Oh my gosh. This is hard to look at, and it's hard to think about for Celtics fans. If I'm a Celtics fan, I'm going, okay, I'm glad we got Jaylen Brown back because I wanted Jaylen Brown back, but could we not have gotten him for, $200 million less than that? Because there's not another team, and I don't think there's another team in the NBA that would pay Jaylen Brown that type of money to come and be their franchise player. Now, they would pay a guy like Jason Tatum that, and I think the entire NBA fan base, everybody who watches the NBA, kind of expected something like that for a guy like Jason Tatum next offseason. Not this offseason for Jaylen Brown. He does not deserve that type of money. I think that's absolutely crazy. I don't even know what to say anymore.
Yeah, I have three words to say for this. What the hell? That's all I have to say is, you look at Jaylen Brown in this playoffs, in this final game against Miami Heat. I think he had like 8 turnovers. He couldn't dribble the basketball. He looked like a third grader out there playing against Miami Heat. And then the Celtics go, no, you really choke in the playoffs. Let me go ahead and make you the highest paid player in NBA history and give you the Supermax. And I'm going to steal some of what J.J. Redick said on his podcast, as he was talking about Jaylen Brown getting his contract extension. And he said the Supermax, when it was instituted, was for the upper echelon of players in this league, the LeBron James, the Kevin Durant, the Giannis, the Jokic, the Embiid. It's not for the above average kind of mid-tier type of guys like Jaylen Brown or somebody like, let's say, Donovan Mitchell or something like that, who might get this extension. It's just, they don't, I know they bust their tail and they spend a lot of time in the offseason and in the season perfecting their craft and stuff like that. But there is no reason somebody like Jaylen Brown, who's not even the best player on his team, should be making the most money in NBA history this season and be making $69 million in 2028, 2029. It shouldn't happen. The NBA needs to really crack down on this. I know they're getting a lot of money from the new NBA, the new TV deal they're going to sign and all that, and the cap's going to go up 10% annually over the next few years. And these contracts, we're going to see players like Jokic and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Ja and Zion might be making $400 million over 5 years. But it shouldn't happen. I'm sorry. There's no reason we should be paying these guys $400 million over 5 years. It shouldn't, especially the state this country's in right now. Not to get too political here, but when people can't live paycheck to paycheck and they're paying athletes this type of money, that's absurd. That is absurd.
Yeah,
it really is. I definitely think there's players that definitely deserve the Jaylen Brown type of money, like I mentioned earlier, like Jokic and a Giannis type or Embiid. But this is going to become a thing where we're paying the second best player on your team or a player that's not deserving of a Supermax deal, who's not really seen as a top 15 player in this league, this type of money. And it shouldn't happen. The NBA needs to institute a rule where you have to, let's say, win an MVP or win an NBA championship finals MVP or something like that, to where you qualify for the Supermax extension. Because this is going to ruin the NBA. This is going to ruin it, because you're going to get guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum who eat up the Celtics entire cap space. And then you're going to leave guys like Derek White or Robert Williams or Al Horford little to nothing. They're going to have to sign for like $5, $10 million a year or the veteran minimum because they have no money.
Yeah.
And you saw the NBA did this offseason with the CBA, where the salary cap apron, the tax apron, it's getting hefty. So while these top tier players are getting paid, these players like the skill position players or the 3-and-D type players, they're not going to get paid as much. We might see these players get paid $5 million a year, like the elite level ones, like let's say a Patrick Beverley or maybe even Mikal Bridges. He might fall under that in a couple of years with the Nets. Yeah. So I think the NBA needs to step in on this and definitely regulate it more to where players, like I said earlier, who only win an MVP or win the NBA championship as a finalist MVP or do something like that qualify, instead of if you make an All-NBA team, which we've seen these past few years is not really an accomplishment for that, for lack of a better word, because there's been some players that definitely do not deserve to be on there over certain other players. And that's ruined those players' chances of getting it. So NBA really needs to step in on this type of matter. But let's move on to a guy that got a contract last offseason, but decides, nah, I signed this big contract, I don't want to be here anymore, with guard Damian Lillard. Due to reports that the Portland Trailblazers guard Damian Lillard, his agent warned other teams not to trade for him because he would only play for the Miami Heat, the NBA sent a memo to all 30 teams stating that any player or his agent who makes a public or private comment indicating that he won't fully perform in the services called for under his player contract in the event of a trade will be subject to discipline. So, Gray, we've seen guys like Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving threaten to do this in the past, and they didn't get this type of treatment. And those guys, and KD, he snaked the Thunder. But you have Damian Lillard, who spends his entire 11-year career for the Portland Trailblazers at that team, and they did nothing for him. And he says, I want out, and I really want to go to Miami. And the NBA steps in and says, no, you're going to go wherever they trade you to, and you're going to be happy about it. It feels like there's a double standard at this point, because while I just mentioned those guys, James Harden's offseason requested a trade from the 76ers. And there's been reports where he said he really only wants to go to the Los Angeles Clippers, and he's trying to get a trade there. And the NBA just failed to mention that. So it feels like Lillard's getting singled out by the NBA, and that it feels like a double standard. So how does the NBA stop these outlandish trade requests happening when players are 1 year off of signing a big contract?
First off, I think you talk about the fairness aspect that you mentioned there, Alex. Of anybody of those four players, especially the Durant, the Irving, the Harden, and the Lillard, of any of those four players deserves to be traded wherever the hell they want, it's Damian Lillard because of what he's done for that Portland Trailblazers franchise and what he's meant to that franchise. And how long he's been. He's been there 11 years. The poor guy was there 11 years. He had to deal with their crap for 11 years. And the dude just wants to go to Miami, and his agent recognizes that. And I think Miami is all on board with that. I believe Portland wants, would be okay with sending him to Miami if the right trade request was going. But obviously Portland has the, they have the advantage there because they can listen to whatever offers for Damian Lillard from any of the other 29 teams that they want. And they have the ability to take the best offer, but they also, I think they have to respect Damian Lillard and his desires to want to play for a team like Miami, because you understand why a dude wants to play for Miami, especially a stud point guard like Lillard, because he would instantly make Miami an NBA championship contender if they weren't already, because they literally were just in the finals this past year. He makes them so much better if he goes there, no matter what that trade includes. But it is looking like there is a double standard, by the way, because you mentioned the James Harden situation, and Harden has obviously said that he wants to go to the Clippers, and the Clippers want James Harden. And I think the Sixers would be fine with trading James Harden, just like the Blazers would like to trade Lillard to the Heat. But the Sixers have the opportunity while he's on their, you know, cap space list, while he's on the salary cap table, they have the ability to listen to whatever offer they want. And that's part of it. That's part of trading. That's part of being a professional athlete like that. And they have the ability to accept whatever offer they choose. But I think with Harden, there's not the level of respect that there should be for a guy like Damian Lillard. And we're kind of seeing the opposite, which is a problem in my opinion, because I think with James Harden, he obviously wants to go to the Clippers, but it looks like the 76ers are really trying to make that happen, when it seems like the Trailblazers are just out here, you know, listening to every offer that comes their way, even though the Heat would love Damian Lillard. But it seems like that should be opposite. It seemed like that Damian Lillard should deserve that respect more, especially what he's done for that Trailblazers franchise for those past 11 years that he's been there. He's been such a stud and has really been the only reason they've been able to compete at any level. If Damian Lillard doesn't end up on the Miami Heat, it's going to be upsetting for me, at least. But I think Lillard's a competitive guy, and he's going to compete wherever he goes. I think the guy just wants to be on the Heat because the Heat are very intriguing for a guy like Damian Lillard.
Yeah, the fact that the Portland Trailblazers are still not honoring this guy's trade request, it bothers me, because he gave you 11 years. He gave you his prime of his career, and you can't reward him for trading him away to a team he wants to go to. I mean, you traded CJ McCollum away to the team he wanted to go to. He wanted to go to the Pelicans, and you were fine with trading him for a bag of Doritos. I mean, they traded him for Josh Hart and some other stuff. And then you trade Josh Hart for Cam Reddish, and Cam Reddish is down the Lakers. So basically, you trade your second best player with Damian Lillard for nothing. And no wonder he wants to leave, because you have done nothing to build around him except get guards in the draft to compete with him. You go get Shaedon Sharpe. You go get Scoot Henderson. You don't address your forward positions or your center positions. You don't. And I don't blame the guy for wanting to leave. He gave you 11 years to figure something out in your team, and you haven't done it. So the front office for the Blazers needs to go ahead and get this guy to Miami, because he deserves it. And the fact that NBA sent a memo out just because of Damian Lillard and his agent is awful, because players in the past have done this. Ben Simmons sat out because he didn't want to play for the Sixers, and they did nothing. Kawhi Leonard threatened to sit out for the Spurs. NBA did nothing. But we talked to a guy, Damian Lillard, who spent over a decade with a team, and he wants out. And he can't get out because the NBA wants to quiet him and quiet his agent and prevent him from refusing to play for somebody.
Yeah.
And it's double standard, and it needs to be fixed immediately by the NBA if they're going to fix just Damian Lillard. Let's move on to some college football and a pretty funny story. On the outside looking in, at least, Michigan head football coach Jim Harbaugh is facing a 4-game suspension to start the 2023 season for failing to cooperate with NCAA's investigation into alleged recruiting violations. And the 4 games he'd miss would include East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, and Rutgers. And also worth noting that offensive coordinator Sharon Moore is also expected to receive a 1-game suspension. Gray, do you agree with Jim Harbaugh receiving the suspension, and do you think it'll impact Michigan's season at all?
I do agree with Jim getting a suspension. Obviously, they're not huge alleged violations. Just talking to a recruit during the dead period is a big no-no, but it's like, you know, it's not going to cause Harbaugh any probation or his job or Michigan any wins or that sort of thing. So it's not a huge deal, but I do think like suspending a coach like that for one of the top teams in the country and their coordinator for 1 game, I think it's okay. I think it's about what you probably should do if you're the NCAA. But do I think that's going to affect them? No, not at all. You said the 4 games that they play against in the games that Harbaugh is going to miss. East Carolina week 1, and that'll be the game where Sharon Moore also misses. And then UNLV, Bowling Green, and Rutgers. Michigan will win those games by a combined score of probably 180 points. So it's not going to affect them at all, especially for what Michigan has coming back. And we talked about that when we talked about Michigan in our Big Ten preview. You want to check that out? You can go check that out on YouTube at Students of the Game Pod. We went into depth about how, you know, that's not going to affect Michigan at all in those 4 games because of how good that Michigan team has a chance to be and who they have coming back and who those 4 are. East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, and Rutgers aren't going to do anything. I mean, Michigan could go out there without Blake Corum and JJ McCarthy and still win by 180.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to affect them at all, especially those games. But also with their veteran leadership they got. They got basically their entire offense back and their entire defense back. So I don't think it hampers them at all, and I still think Michigan's probably the favorite in the Big Ten going forward. All right, let's move on to the next story. The University of Colorado will leave the Pac-12 for the Big 12 after the 2023-2024 season, after the board voting unanimously in favor of the move. The Big 12 followed up the announcement by saying that it'd be interesting adding one more school to the conference to bring them to 14 teams. Gray, do you like Colorado's move to move back to the Big 12 after leaving in 2010?
It's interesting. I mean, it makes sense geographically, unlike some of the other realignments that we've had relatively recently in the past few years, or are going to have at least. But my thing is, I think this year, I think the Pac-12 has a chance to be very, very good with some of the talent that they bring back. USC, Oregon, Utah, Washington teams like that. Some really good quarterbacks as well. But I think Deion Sanders running from the Pac-12 is funny to me because you just say that Deion Sanders is running from the Pac-12 to go to the Big 12, where in that time, you're going to see UCF in there. BYU is going to be in there. Baylor and Kansas and those teams are still going to be in there. But you don't have the Texas and Oklahoma as they move on to the SEC. So I honestly think, as much as I don't think the Pac-12 is going to be very, very successful after USC and UCLA leave, there. Colorado, the definition of this is running away from Oregon. They are terrified of the Oregon Ducks and that program. And I don't blame them. Oregon's a much better program in a much better spot than a program like Colorado. And I just think it's funny, though.
Yeah. What do you think this means for the Pac-12? Because you just mentioned Oregon's still there. You still got Washington. You got Arizona. Do you think they probably leave in the next couple of years? Because at the outside looking in, it looks like there's probably going to be maybe a power 3, not a power 5 anymore, because you got the Pac-12 basically losing maybe their top 3 programs in the future. And then you look at the ACC, they're about Florida State or Clemson leaving away from that conference and imploding. So what does this mean for the Pac-12? And then what does this mean for the conference landscape going into the future?
Well, yeah, it, just like you said, it can be dangerous for the Pac-12 because it makes a lot of sense for teams like Oregon and Washington State and Arizona State to move on and move away from the Pac-12 and look at the Big 12 and look at the Big 10 like the like USC and UCLA are doing. And it makes great sense for a team like Oregon to do that, especially at the football spot. But I mean, you also look at some of the Pac-12 schools and their basketball schools and their baseball schools and other college athletics in their programs. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting to watch how the Pac-12 moves on without USC and UCLA and now without Colorado after this upcoming season. That's going to be weird. That's going to be very, very weird, especially. And you talked about the ACC as well, because we very well could see the Big 12, the Big 10, and the SEC be the only power conferences remaining in a few years, to be honest, because when you look at the ACC and you look at the outlook of their conference, I know they're a very good basketball conference with North Carolina, Duke, Miami, and those sort of teams. But then you look at the football conference and they are Florida State and Clemson away from imploding and being worse than a conference like the Pac-12. And because then you look at the best team, you're looking at either Miami or North Carolina. And then if you look at the Pac-12, you still got Oregon. And so, yeah, I think 5 years from now, this college football and the conference realignment landscape could be completely different than as we see it today.
I definitely think Colorado is going to be the first. I think Colorado was actually the first Power Five team. So like, hold on, I forgot what it said. It was like it's the first Power Five team that has left a conference and returned to the same league of its own volition. So they left the Big Ten and came back to the Big Ten. So there's teams that have done that in the past. I think we saw Missouri do it, something like that. But
they can do it again, by the way.
Yeah. So I think Colorado is going to be probably the leader here. They're going to see the Pac-12 just implode in the next probably year or so, because Oregon's not going to be in that conference. Washington's not going to want to be there. Arizona's definitely not with their basketball program. So I don't think the Pac-12 is going to last much longer. And you're probably going to see it just be dissolved in like the Mountain West or something.
Yeah.
And that's pretty sad to see, because the Pac-12, when USC was USC, was one of the best college football conferences in the country. And you look at the ACC, that conference is just like a powder keg waiting to explode, because they signed that massive TV deal and they look stupid for it now, because you saw what the Big Ten just signed. The SEC is about to sign a big one. So that conference, they can easily vote that conference to be dissolved within the next month. They could. Yep. And it would not surprise me at all, because those teams appear to be very unhappy with the money they get from the TV deal. All right, moving on to the last college football story. Senators Joe Manchin and Tommy Tuberville introduced a bipartisan bill regarding NIL and other college sports issues. The bill, which is called the Protecting Athletes, Schools, and Sports Act, would allow the NCAA to prohibit certain types of NIL deals, such as gambling and alcohol, require collectives and boosters to be formally affiliated with the specific schools and register with the FTC, require NIL contracts to be disclosed within 30 days, guarantee health insurance for sports-related injuries for uninsured student athletes for 8 years following graduation, and limit an athlete's ability to transfer and play right away until after completing the first 3 years of academic eligibility. So looking at all the things that would be introduced with that bill, Gray, do you like the idea behind it and everything they're trying to implement?
Yeah, I think it's moving in the right direction. In my opinion, it's got some things that I'm like, ooh, yeah, that's a fantastic idea and something that needs to be implemented like now, and not just for college football, but for college sports in general, because NIL is new and it's shiny and it's different. And we saw in college basketball the past 3 or 4 years, we've seen these coaches, these more traditional coaches, just go, oh yeah, no, I can't do that. That's not a part of my game. We saw that with Krzyzewski. We saw that with Roy Williams. I think we saw that with Jim Boeheim from Syracuse. So it's, you know, they're running from it because it's new, it's different. And college sports, especially coaches and these collectives, need to adapt to it. So I think, I don't like, you know, a lot of involvement from the NCAA in stuff like this, but it's got to happen, because there not only needs to be rules set, but boundaries and things to protect not only the school and the coaches, but also to protect the student athlete, because that's the first thing. They are student athletes. Which one comes first when I say student athlete? Student. And when they are in, no matter what sport they are, male, female, or anything, they are student athletes first. So I think protect the schools protecting them and the NCAA protecting them has got to be number one. And that's the name of the bill. I think the requiring the contracts to be disclosed, I think that's very smart, because you know that's going to help with consistency and that sort of thing. I think limiting the type of companies that these athletes and collectives can partner with is smart, because that protects the student athletes and their brands. I think the best thing is the guaranteed health insurance for sports related injuries for uninsured student athletes for 8 years following their graduation. That's amazing. That really is. That's something that needs to be. That's what I was talking about. That's something that needs to go in. That needs to go in right now, and that needs to be available for all sports, for all student athletes across all sports, male and female, especially for contact and collision sports, man. Because there's sports related injuries, especially as students like this, it really takes a hit on not only them and their families, but their schools and their programs that they're involved in. So I think that's absolutely fantastic. So I think it's got some really good ideas and moves to it, and we're seeing it. We're seeing the move in the right direction when it comes to NIL, because once NIL became a thing, it was chaos for about 3 or 4 months. It really was. It was like, whoa, what are we doing? Whoa, what's going on? We don't know what we're doing, because it was new. And just like I said, it's different. And you saw a lot of coaches go, yep, I'm out, because that's not what I do. So I think moving towards not only structure with NIL, but boundaries and implementing things that would protect the student athletes and the schools and the coaches and everybody that comes with it is in the right direction.
Yeah, I think regulating the collectives and the boosters and the agents is a big thing for me, because it feels like those guys are just going around willy-nilly and just getting every student athlete they can to sign with them or get them to their school. I think Miami's one of the biggest proponents of that with all their boosters and collectives they got down there. Then I think they like paid multiple players to technically come play for them. The school technically didn't, but the boosters and the collective, I think the booster himself that technically did. So I think getting those under control and sort of letting the NCAA kind of oversee what they do and not technically pay players to leave a school is a big thing for me. And I like the health insurance, because we've seen players 5-10 years after they quit, or I guess 5 to 8 years is what the length is, after they finish playing a sport, they start suffering from the effects of it. CTE is a big thing. You know, you can't technically tell that till you see the brain after they die, but that's a big thing. It affects their mental health and all that, the disorders you suffer. So getting that health insurance for them is a big thing for me, like you said, Gray, for you. And then another thing I look at is limiting the athlete's ability to transfer and play right away until after 3 years of completing their academic eligibility. I think that's also a big thing, because it feels like now a player loses their starting job or doesn't get to start their freshman year, and they cry home. They go home crying to mama, and they say, "No, I don't want to play for Alabama." And Nick said, "I don't want to play for Kirby Smart in Georgia because I don't get to start right away as a freshman. I came in as a 5-star. I think I'm the best player in the world, and I want to go leave, and I want to go play for Deion Sanders in Colorado or Dan Lanning in Oregon because I'm going to start right away." I think implementing this is a big thing, because it encourages these players and instills in them that, hey, competition is good. You need to fight for your spot. You just don't need to be given it. And I think that's what players are not learning nowadays, is they come into a situation, they don't get the job right away, they don't want to battle for it, they don't want to earn it, and just want to go get it handed to them. And yeah, I think multiple former players have addressed this in the past on multiple different sports radio shows, that these players seem a little bit pampered to than they were in the past. So I think this is a big thing for me. And the exceptions would be for like coaching changes. If, let's say, Nick Saban retires and the players want to leave, I think there shouldn't be any punishment for that. They should be able to leave and play immediately, because the coach they signed up to play for is gone. So I think that's a big thing that needs to be in the bill if they do implement the 3-year academic eligibility thing. But just to clarify, this is not technically approved yet, or it's not going to be implemented within a year or anything. It has to go through the legislative branch. That has to go through House of Representatives and Congress and all that. So this is not set in stone yet, but hopefully what's going on in the government right now, it gets pushed through, because it needs to with what college football is dealing with right now and college sports as a whole. Let's move on to our last story today. It's a bit of a weird one. I'm sad Nathan isn't here because he loves these type of stories. In celebration of National Mustard Day on August 5th, Skittles has partnered with French's to make the first ever mustard-flavored Skittle. You can try the new flavor by visiting French's Mustard Mobile, which will be stopping in Atlanta on July 31st, Washington, D.C. on August 2nd, and New York on August 5th. So Gray, if we leave right now, we might be able to make the one in Atlanta. But would you consider trying it?
No, not even a little bit. No, that sounds horrible.
And, you know, I'm not a big fan of mustard in general, and I love Skittles. That just sounds, the mustard flavored Skittle just sounds like that is offensive to me as a Skittles fan. Like that sounds horrible. Absolutely not. That's one of the worst things we've ever discussed on this show. Food-wise, at least.
Yeah, some review said the mustard candy has no sense at all, but there is a spicy blast of horseradish engulfs the mouth before giving away the mustard taste we've all come here for. And there's a sugar rush at the end.
Oh.
I'm really sad Nathan's not here, because he definitely would have had a few choice words to say for Skittles and French's about this partnership. These combinations of these companies and their partnerships are getting pretty weird nowadays, because we've talked about it in the past with the Grimace Shake. Now, that wasn't really a partnership, but that was weird. And you got the Spider-Man burger and Burger King. I mean, this is getting really weird.
It's all about the money.
It really is, but I don't know how they think that French's thing is going to do. Mustard flavored Skittles is not getting me going in the morning. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.